Oh, this could be one of those coast-to-coast classics. Joe Bullard, our special guest tonight. We're going to be talking about the Bermuda Triangle, and then later on in the program, that incredible location in Florida, built by an old guy named Edward Leed Scullin, called Coral Castle. Joe's next on Coast to Coast AM. Joe Bullard was born in Florida back in 1951, attended the University of West Florida, graduated with a bachelor's degree in journalism. He found out about the Coral Castle on television in the series, you remember that, In Search Of. That was back in 1984. And during his time, he was working as a Lake City Community College public information director and a professor of a newspaper class. Joe spent 10 years of research at Coral Castle, started writing his book, Waiting for Agnes, back in 1995. Took him 5 years to get the story on paper, almost 4 years to publish it. We'll talk about Coral Castle next hour. This hour, the Bermuda Triangle as well. Joe, welcome back, my friend. How are you?
Thank you, George, so much. It's great to be back with the...
Always a pleasure.
Man, it's great.
They've been writing me. They've wanted you back, and here you are.
Oh, man, I tell you, when I hear that coast music, I go into the twilight zone, you know?
It does. It's kind of chilling, isn't it?
Oh, everybody loves it. They go, man, I just want a record of that, you know, doom, 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 doom.
Hey, I'm looking forward to updates next hour on the Coral Castle, get your take on things, and also, you know, your guess. I mean, we've had so many years for you to work at this, how you think Edward Leed Scullin did his thing. But we'll talk about that next hour. This year, what's new in the Bermuda Triangle area, Joseph?
George, in studying this Bermuda Triangle, you know, if you look at it, and I've studied and looked at it in some different ways, I've always thought, you know, it was a triangular formation. But actually, when you look at it now, the flights and stuff that are disappearing down there, they've actually got there's what they call a typical triangle linking Bermuda, and it goes right on up into, believe it or not, New Jersey. There's a Devil's Triangle, which is kind of like a trapezoid, and this goes all the way down, extending past Puerto Rico, past Cuba, almost to Venezuela. Then it doglegs, goes back up, and comes out at Tampa. And then a third one comes up here from New Jersey, and it swings around, George, kind of like if a crab was facing Florida with his pincers stuck around the state, that's what it would look like. And it's a huge, wide circle. So it's not just a triangle. It's actually a three-phase thing. And I was just looking at some maps that I had from some notes. And if you look at the disappearances and the rates of it, George, if you take those little Hershey's Kisses and stack them up, the distance between Florida and Bermuda, I mean, it looks like little hundreds of these little dots. And then they start going out towards Bermuda, and they start slacking off. And the things that are going out there, George, you know, there's a lot of people who don't believe in it and stuff. But, you know, anybody in Florida here, man, we grew up with this thing. And there's people always telling you stories about, hey, I went through there on a cruise and saw these UFOs. And, you know, George, we kind of take it for granted now. But there's really something to this. This thing, let me give you the map here. It goes into the Gulf of Mexico, continues through Cuba, Jamaica, Haiti, Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, the West Indies Islands. And then it comes up through the Bahamas and once more to Bermuda. And, you know, the way this thing got its name, it's been there for, you know, hundreds of years. And when Columbus came through it, you know, the famous story of him seeing the UFO. Well, right. I always thought, George, that he just saw a UFO. You know, it came by. This was a UFO that turned into a USO.
Now, explain that.
Okay. Now, if you go back and look at his documents, and I didn't see the whole true document, but I saw the copies of it, okay, and it's written in his handwriting. And he said, we're sailing along here, you know, all of a sudden it's at night, and we look up, and here comes this. He didn't know any other way to describe it, George, but he said it was a flickering candle, okay? And he said it circled the ship. And we were like, oh, my God, it's this bright light. And then it started pulsating. And he said all of a sudden then from this, I'd say he said about 500 feet up, it just came straight down and splashed into the ocean. Okay? He said we saw the splash, but there was no, you know, if you've come from outer space, you're going to have heat on some kind of metal. There was no smoke caused from it, like there was no heat on that UFO. And then he said it didn't just disappear, but it circled the ship underwater at a slow rate of speed, like he was watching what they were doing, and then all of a sudden it just took off.
I love these stories, Joe. I mean, these These underwater UFO stories are some of the best I've ever heard.
They really are, George. And, we just touched on this the last time I was with you, April 3rd of last year. And they give you these little blurbs. They don't tell you a whole lot. They've just discovered a chasm off the coast of Florida that is 20,000 feet deep. Okay? Now, I don't know if you saw this. It was recently in the papers, international papers, but the ex-Canadian defense minister has finally admitted the existence of UFOs.
Yeah, okay. Paul Hellyer.
Yeah, Paul Hellyer.
We've talked about that since you were with us last year.
Okay.
An amazing story.
Excuse me. What these guys are saying, George, is that these UFOs are using that channel from Florida all the way up into Canada.
Okay, now this channel, when you say it's 20,000 feet deep, how long, how wide is it?
They didn't really give the report on how wide it was. They just gave the depth. They didn't really give us from say Florida to Bermuda or anything like that. Just like it was like a channel, though, kind of like maybe like 10 rivers wide or something, but nothing really specific. They were just more amazed at the depth of it.
Joel, well, are you saying that some of these disappearances, we're going to get into some of them this hour, in the Bermuda Triangle, are caused by these ET craft, or are we still talking about the possibility of some unexplained Earth phenomenon?
George, we've got everything there. This is a smorgasbord of stuff. We've got UFOs. We've got electronic fogs surrounding barges. You're pulling a barge, and the barge disappears while you're pulling it.
Some things could be natural, some are mystical. So everything is contributing.
Everything. You've got UFOs that are, these bombers go into a squadron of them and they disappear and they never return.
Why this region, Joe? Is it unusual? Are there any parts on this planet that might be similar to the Bermuda Triangle?
George, there is nothing. There's nothing. If you go and look, and I was just looking through my notes here, there's no other place on the planet where there's this concentration of UFOs. No place.
Weird.
And when you're talking about these UFOs, there's all kinds of people who are. Well, and here's one of the most amazing ones. I love this one. What they're saying is that when you come to the Bermuda Triangle, there's a replay of past events. Okay, and I'll give you an example. Here's a guy, let's see, and some funny, let's see if I can find my note here, excuse me.
You've got notes all over the place, Joe,
don't
you?
I've got so many books here, man. This thing is amazing. Okay, anyway, these people were on the Queen Elizabeth II, and they're coming through the Bermuda Triangle. They're coming through from England, of course. Well, they look up, George, and here comes this plane, like a little Cessna, and it's got red and green blinking lights. And they're sitting on the deck, and they look up, and they say, hey, look at that, a plane coming over. Well, all of a sudden, it just dives straight down, George, goes into the water with no splash. And it was so close. I mean, they couldn't read the name on the plane, but they could just see it was a little Cessna Beechcraft, something like that, like everybody uses down there. Well, they were shocked. Everybody on the boat, like 10 people, saw it. So they come back to base. They report it to Miami and all this, and they say, we saw this plane. Can you check your logbooks and see what planes are missing? There were no planes missing.
Hmm.
Nothing on the logbook. And what people are saying, that, George, this is what's fun about this. We don't know. You're sitting there. This is what I love about Coast. We can talk about these things. People can say I'm crazy. I don't care. Because these things happen. What some people are theorizing is that there's some kind of electronic fog or something that traps time, past or future, and that this plane that crashed actually could have crashed 20 or 30 years ago. And you'd have to go back and look in your logbooks and see, was there a Cessna Beechcraft at the time Queen Elizabeth was passing through there when it crashed?
Let's talk about some more of these cases, and then we'll talk about these possibilities of the ET craft, the time warp, this green mist that everybody seems to see in this area as well. What are some of the other episodes that truly are remarkable?
Here's a great one. Now, this doesn't have anything to do with UFOs, but this is the electronic fog that you're talking about.
Okay.
Are you familiar with the Bruce Gernon escapade?
Tell me a little bit more.
Okay, Bruce Gernon is passing through Andros Island. He's heading to Bimini. Okay? This happens like December 4th, 1970. It's about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Now, he sees this, he called it a lenticular or lens-shaped cloud. Now, it's sitting low on the ocean. It's lower than anything they've ever seen before. It's like 500 feet above the surface. Now, there's only one other time, George, in history that a cloud like this has been seen, and I think it was like on the other side of the planet somewhere, in Europe or somewhere. Okay, so he's going up. He's ascending. He's trying to get his altitude. So he goes up 1,000 feet a minute. Well, as he looks down at this lens cloud, okay, it's starting to undergo a metamorphosis. It's like it's changing into a huge towering cumulus cloud, and it's rising at the same rate as his plane. Like, it's sitting there, it watches him go up, so it follows him.
That's strange.
Okay? Yeah. Now, so as he's looking around, all of a sudden, the cloud engulfs him. Now, he's flying a little bonanza, okay, which is not real big. And he's starting to go up, and he hits the sky at about 11,500 feet. So he's climbed 1,500 feet, and this cloud just comes up and goes, boom, covers him.
And he's trying to get away from it, right?
He's trying to get away from it now because he's thinking, how did it go from down there up here and catch me at that speed? Okay, so he looks behind now, and the cloud that he saw is building into an enormous squall. It's like a semicircle, you know. And in this area, George, a squall is like something that the rains came up and the lightnings flash and the skies go dark, okay? So now he sees another cloud building up in front of him, extending like 60,000 feet up.
Jeez.
So he's thinking, okay, now I'm in between two clouds. Well, he looks around. The cloud that's in front of him is the same cloud that's behind him.
He's right in the middle of it.
He's in the middle of it. Now he says, oh, my God. Now he's got his dad and this other person with him, and they're freaking out. Never seen, I mean, been in Florida all their life. And he says, his dad says, oh, my God, fly around it.
Okay? Now, are we getting radio transmissions from Bruce or anything? How do we know?
Everything is shut down.
All right.
His compasses are spinning. Nothing's working. And it's like he said, nothing fit. He couldn't see the ocean. He couldn't see the sky. There's no horizon. Inside this cloud, there's nothing but bursts of lightning.
Okay.
And all these colors going off, okay? So he says, his dad says, fly around it, fly around it. So he just guns this little bonanza. Well, he curves out around it. As he curves out around it, it follows him. It just, it's like, George, like a big marshmallow that just goes around. You can't get up, down, or around it, okay?
Okay.
Now, as he tries to fly around it, it forms a donut shape, and it extends around him. He described it like he felt like a boa constrictor had flown up there and was squeezing him, because now he looks back, and there's a 30-mile diameter visibility, okay, and only 10 miles in front of him. He can't see anything. Everything has changed.
Now, is he panicking at all, or is he in control?
Oh, he's panicking because
he's
his dad. His dad is a really experienced flyer. Bruce has been flying like 30 years. His dad, 50 years. You know, I mean, these guys are—they're just out there flying around for fun, and all of a sudden this thing comes up. You know, so now the cloud comes up, George, and engulfs them. They can't fly over it, under it, nowhere, and he can't get under it because the donut is constricting him like the boa constrictor. Now, this is about 4 or 5 miles up, okay? Now, these bright white flashes of light are bursting inside, okay? Now, imagine this. He said, you're in your house. It's a sunny day. You've got your Venetian blinds, and you turn them down so that you don't have any light, and the room gets dark, okay? The plane goes dark. The whole place, like they took the Venetian blind, turned it dark, okay? So now, he looks down this tunnel, and about 10 miles away, he starts to see blue sky, and he's like, oh, my God. Well, about this time, George, there's weightlessness. He starts kind of floating inside his plane, and as he's floating, something is pulling him forward, and he's trying to pull himself back in the seat. You know, he's got his seatbelt on, but it's still pulling him real strong, kind of cutting into his shoulder blades. So he looks back now. The walls of this donut that he's surrounded in the middle of are collapsing behind him, like the snake would be pulling his coils on him.
Right, right.
So he's thinking now, oh, my God, this thing's got us. You know, what are we going to do? All of a sudden, the walls that are behind him that are collapsing start forming slits, exactly like you would take your Venetian blinds,
okay,
turn that thing, and now you've got slits. And below him is Miami Beach. The cloud disappears. And he looks down. Now, he just left Andros Island, okay, Bimini. That is 50 miles from Miami. It's a 30-minute flight, okay? He looks at his watch. He's been gone 3 minutes.
Yeah, I was going to say.
He looks at his gas tank when they land. He's like, they're just freaking out. They're going, what? And he thinks to check his gas tank. He's got 10 extra gallons.
What did he conclude by all this?
Okay, let me get to this. He said, excuse me. He said, we went through 100 miles of space in 30 minutes of time in 3 minutes, according to the logbooks. Okay? He, only thing he could figure, George, was that this cloud, somehow, there was an electronic, that fog that he's talking about, that it messes up the compasses. He's talking about time somehow is compressed in the magnetic waves. You know, the compass is spinning and all that. And the only thing he can figure is it's a time warp. Because how can you explain going from there? I mean, this is a man who's been flying all his life, comes from Bimini to Miami in 3 minutes. It's a time warp.
We've heard other stories, Joe, about people flying into this green-type mist, seeing World War II bombers, and these are modern-day pilots who flew into it, and then they fly out of it, and they're gone. It could be something very strange like that out there.
And seeing the Flying Dutchman, some of the ships that they've seen. You remember the Flying Dutchman that
yes.
was supposed to be? Right.
Tell me about this lost Cessna 172, piloted by the woman, Carolyn Cossio.
Oh, yeah, this is a good one. Okay, this is my...
This was back in June of 1964, I believe.
Yeah, let's see. Okay, yeah, that's my number. Yeah, oh, this is a good one. It's not very long, but now this happened... I think this happened right off of, the lost Cessna. Okay, she's flying along there. She's got a passenger. His name's Richard Rosen. Okay, their flight plan, she was going to refuel at Grand Turk Island on her way from Pompano Beach. She's going through the Bahamas headed to Jamaica. Well, about the time she should have reached the Turcos Islands, the personnel of this small airport, they saw the Cessna 172. Well, she's circling the island. They could hear the voice. She's talking to her passengers, but they couldn't make radio contact from the tower. She was heard to express concern about the gas supply. Now, this happened, ironically, George, also in the Flight 19. At first, the tower and the Flight 19 could talk back and forth. All of a sudden, only Flight 19 could talk to each other, but they couldn't talk to the tower. She's trying to talk to the tower, but they don't hear her. So All they're hearing is she's saying, there's nothing down there. And she's saying, the horizon doesn't look the same, the ocean doesn't look the same. All her compasses, everything starts going crazy, okay? And she said, the last thing she said was, is there no way out of this? All of a sudden, the plane disappears off radar.
And so, she's gone.
She's gone.
And we never found her.
Never, not anything.
Is it possible that we somehow in that region could be connected to another parallel universe, and that seems to be the portal up there?
That's you're exactly right. The sky actually, in some of these cases, the sky actually, people watch the sky open, and the plane flew into the open sky and just disintegrated. And I don't mean blew up, but it just disappeared. Excuse me, George. On the observers on the Turk Island could see the plane and heard the conversation, but she couldn't hear the tower.
So and then
they
gone.
Were saying through a singular reverse inversion of time, she was in effect looking at Turk Island, but a moment in time before the airport was built.
Jeez.
Uh-huh.
And let's assume for a moment she goes through into a portal, into another parallel universe. What do you think she sees? I mean, is she still there now flying around? What do you think has happened to her?
I think, well, it's the same thing, and they stopped the transmission. You've probably covered this before about the Admiral Byrd when he's flying to the South Pole.
Right.
You've heard that story where he looks down and sees the prehistoric mammoths and cavemen?
Yep.
Okay, that type of thing, she could very well fly right into a place like that or anywhere, I suppose. And I'm sitting here thinking, well, she's going to land. She's got to land somewhere if she's going through a portal, you know. She's got to land unless she crashes like maybe Amelia Earhart or someone like that. She's got to go somewhere, I think.
Or she's still flying, Joe.
Or she's still flying.
We'll be back with more of these stories in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. With our guest tonight, Joe Bullard, we'll talk with Joe about the Coral Castle next hour. When we come back, some more stories in the Bermuda Triangle on Coast to Coast AM. Joe Bullard, we'll talk a few more cases here, and then we'll get into some more possibilities of the Bermuda Triangle. The Cessna went off into Never Never Land. How about this case? Let's get back to this Flight 19. Okay. Tell me about that one.
Okay. The Flight 19 was five Avenger bombers, torpedo bombers. What they were doing, George, they were on a practice run. And this, I said, this is how the Bermuda Triangle actually got its name. And what they were going to do, it was supposed to be a two-hour run. They were going to leave Fort Lauderdale. They actually took to the skies at like 2:10, and they were going to fly out to Bermuda and then come back down to Puerto Rico and then back over to Fort Lauderdale. That's what forms the triangle, and that's where the Bermuda Triangle got its name from. However, a few minutes after they got up there, when they were flying through that area, they just about gotten to Bermuda kind of halfway through, and their instruments started just everything going crazy. And there was two guys. The guy who was leading it, Powers, was a very experienced flyer, and some of them were students, and some of them were students, but they had some good hours in flying time.
They knew what they were doing, right?
Yeah, they were students, but they were only students flying this bomber. They had flown other things up. You know, they had flown in Tarawa and Iwo Jima and all those places, so they had experience, but they just were not experienced in the dive bombing area. So the Navy wanted them to have experience, but all of them were experienced, and his co-pilot was very experienced also. But all of their instruments started going crazy. And Taylor, Lieutenant Taylor, he's the commander, he starts panicking because after a while, you know, he's supposed to be leading these guys, and none of his instruments are working. So he actually turns over the flight to Lieutenant Powers, which is actually very strange. That just never happens. And Lieutenant Powers did not know that, you know, his instruments, he thought his instruments were working. Well, none of them were working. So, George, they're just out there flying around. And as they're going, they keep reporting back to the tower. The tower says, well, fly northwest, Florida due east. And the guy says, man, we don't know where that is.
Yeah,
and he looks down, and he says, the ocean. And here's what gets me, George. The ocean is the ocean. I mean, it's just the ocean. And he says, it doesn't look like the ocean. We can't find the horizon. We can't find the sky.
Well, what does he mean, it doesn't look like the ocean?
That's what I've got a question mark here. What do you mean it doesn't look like the ocean? He does not explain it. I think he was so screwed up in his mind, he couldn't even give you a description of what he was seeing.
Invisibility was okay, right?
Everything is perfect. I mean, you just could not get a better, clearer day.
And then what happened? Did they run out of fuel? Have they crashed?
Well, actually,
where'd they go?
Actually, they are filled up. They've got 100 gallons in that tank. And they're flying, and they're flying. And all of a sudden, the tower keeps telling them, well, fly this way. So they fly that way, but it doesn't bring them in. And after a while, the tower starts talking to them, but they can't hear them. And they get fainter and fainter and fainter. And the tower's going, you know, why aren't you guys responding to us? About this time, as they're flying around, it's getting late at night. I mean, we're talking 6 or 7. They were supposed to have been back at 4 o'clock, George. They're still out there flying around. Still, you know, and this ham operator, I'll tell you this, he picks up this signal, and he says, he hears them talking. And another guy, who was not part of Flight 19, a pilot named Cox, overhears him. He calls Taylor, and Taylor actually hears him. And he says, Taylor, just do this. Follow the sun. Go north. And I'm going to meet you up there. And Taylor says, don't come after me.
Don't Cox, come after me?
Cox, have you heard this part where he says, don't come after me?
No.
Okay. I was going to save this for the last, on the last to finish it up with, but this is too good. They actually, in the transmission, Taylor tells Cox, he says, don't come after me. They look like they are from outer space.
I've never heard this before.
Okay. That's exactly what Taylor says. Now, he's been flying around all this time, and he's never mentioned it. But now he says it seems like he's seeing them. Now, I think somehow they used this disturbance. I don't know what they were doing or why they wanted to capture these guys, but he says, don't come after me. Now, the official version, when it gets back, when Cox reports this, they cut off the part, the Navy cuts off the part that says they look like they're from outer space. And the only official log reports is, don't come after me. Well, a ham operator radio guy happened to be, you know, he was an amateur, but he'd just gotten his set. He flips it on, and here's these guys talking. And he hears Taylor say, they look like they're from outer space. Well, he writes all this stuff down and then sends this report in to the Navy. And, of course, they discount it and say, oh, he's just an amateur. He didn't know what he was doing.
And I bet they hide it.
They do. It's not in the official log report. It's only in the ham operator's report to the tower.
And when he was saying they look like they're from outer space, do you think he was talking about craft, or could he see occupants? What do you think?
I think both. Because when he says they, it sounds like craft and people. He didn't say, you know, the craft look like they're from outer space. They look like they're from outer space.
I keep going back to those scenes from Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Spielberg's movie, where at the end, you know, they let all the occupants that they had abducted or picked up, they let them all go, and they were getting off the craft. Sounds like if this is what's been going on, some kind of craft gobbled up these planes.
Right. I love this. This is Captain Power's wife. Now, she's the one that Taylor turned over the flight to Captain Powers. Now, she kept trying to get all these reports. You know, all these relatives, of course, George, are going crazy. Like, what do you mean my flight, he disappeared? What are you talking about? So they're all mad. So she started her own investigation, Captain Powers' wife, and she made this report. She said that she believed that some of these victims did not, listen to this, so this is your idea, George, they did not die or they didn't disappear from the Earth, and they are still alive, probably flying around somewhere. And she bases her opinion partly on her own intuition and on the brief extent of the search, despite the close-by sightings, as well as a report of an officer by a local Seminole Indian. These Seminole Indians have reported that they had some ideas of what had happened. Why these Seminole Indians, it's like their intuition, they kind of heard something or saw something in a vision, okay, that one of them had, kind of like Geronimo before, you know, he went into battle. Custer's Last Stand, I'm sorry. And he had these, you know, intuitions.
Little Bigfoot.
Little Bigfoot. Yeah, Little Bighorn, I'm sorry. And
little
he said that the Seminole Indians
Little
reported,
Bighorn or Little Big...
Yeah, little Bighorn. Little
Bighorn, okay.
Yeah. The survivors, listen to this, had been found on the shore in Florida by another government agency, and they were sent to a West Coast military hospital. For years, Joan Powers has tried to track down these rumors, but has generally come up against a wall of official science. She says, my own theory is that the men saw something up there over the triangle, something strange, which jammed their instruments, something which so frightened Lieutenant Taylor that he didn't want Cox, to whom Taylor radioed, don't come after me, to jeopardize his own life for national security reasons. The Navy will not go public with what they know.
Is Power's wife still alive, do you know?
I think she's dead now.
She would have been a great interview.
Well, that's something we can check on, because I haven't confirmed that. She could still very well be alive.
Now, what year did this happen?
It would have been December the 3rd, 1945.
45. Let's say she
December
would have been
5th,
about.
I'm sorry, George.
Let's say she would have been 25 in 45. Man, she'd be 75, 80, 85 years old now. She could be alive.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. I hadn't thought about it. She'd be a great one.
I want to check into that. What about, and let's talk about the various theories now for a moment, and we'll get into some other cases, and then, my gosh, this hour's almost gone, Joe. We still got to talk about Coral Castle.
I know.
Okay, let's first of all talk about Atlantis. There have been theories that Atlantis sank in the, you know, Bimini area, which is included in the Bermuda Triangle, in that they had some kind of massive crystal. And this crystal is still active, is still functioning, and is pulling down planes and ships. That's one theory. Elaborate on that.
You just stole. I was saving this for a future program.
Sorry.
You have stolen my material here. Yes.
I'm not plagiarizing that.
No, not at all. Not at all.
And you're doing the books on it, not me.
George, that's exactly right. What Casey said happened was, in Atlantis, they had developed, if you can imagine this, take a pyramid, turn it upside down so that the flat base catches the sun. It's like a huge crystal, okay? And the point is down to the Earth. They had these laser stations set up, and they believed that what happened was, just like with us now, you know, we get mad at somebody, and somebody flipped one of these switches on, and that force that came out of, like a laser beam, whatever you want it, touched off those volcanoes there, and the whole place, you know, it went down in like a galactic type war thing, and that they believe that some of these machines still exist and that are still down there. And the thing that I was going to say, and I've got one other one that I'm going to tell you about, there is a doctor from San Diego, I forget his name now, this was back in the 70s, okay, he's diving off the coast of Bermuda. Now, between Florida and Bermuda, here again, the weather patterns, I mean, it's crazy. George, you got there on the boat one minute, you're scuba diving, and a guy rings you and says, hey, man, we got to get out of here, storm coming up. So this doctor is from San Diego, is down there diving, it's his vacation, he's only got 2 weeks, And so he's discovering this stuff, and they call him, and they say, hey, Doc, come out. You know, there's a storm. So they get back in their boat, George. They go back to Bermuda, get in their hotel. Well, they got to wait 2 days for the storm to clear. Now they go back to the area there, right where Casey said Atlantis was, right where the Bimini Wall and the stones and all that stuff are. Well, kind of off to the side of that, I guess I would say. The storms down there are so strong, George, they will blow the sand away off the bottom down there. Well, he goes back. Now, they're on a routine mission. They're not looking to discover anything. Here is a pyramid. Not quite as big as the Great Pyramid, but I mean a big one. The top of it is sheared off, kind of, okay? It's just like sunken in. Have you heard this story, George?
I did.
Oh, gosh.
But I like it better from you.
Okay. I didn't know you'd heard it. I'm sorry. He goes in.
Well, that doesn't mean everybody else has. So
that's true. Okay. So he goes in, and he finds at the top of this pyramid is a set of bronze hands. Now, these hands are joined together at the wrist, kind of like they're holding something. And inside these hands is a crystal ball, about the size of a cue ball, a little bigger, okay? And there's also a rod that's coming down that's still attached to the roof of the pyramid, and it's pointing directly over this crystal ball, okay? And he's like, what is this? So he goes in, and they start tapping him. They say, Doc, the storm's coming back. He has time, and he wrenches this crystal ball out of these hands, carries it with him out of the pyramid, okay? They make it back to shore. Well, he starts studying this thing, and you remember I told you there was an iron or some kind of metal bar running down from the top of the pyramid right so it almost touches the crystal ball.
Right.
Well, as his experiments with this crystal ball, he got to remembering that bar, and he thought, I wonder why it was coming near the crystal. They took an antenna, if you would, off a car, and they put a spring on the end of it so that it would it would move around, the little end of it on there.
Yeah.
And as they moved this spring towards the crystal ball, George, every time it would come to it, the crystal ball would repel the spring and push it up, push it down. It could not touch the crystal ball.
It couldn't touch it?
Could not touch it. Could not come in contact with it every time they tried to push it. Now, you got to remember there was an antenna, and on the antenna they put the little spring, and then they put another piece of metal on the end so that it would float. So every time that piece of spring, that metal with the spring on it came to it, it would push it up and it would float.
So that's a possibility.
Yeah. So
all right,
then what happens is that pyramid gets covered up from the storm again and
all
has
right.
never been found.
But it could still be functional. Could be still doing
it
something.
It could still be doing there. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so one possibility. Time warp.
Through these crystals, yeah.
What's that? Possibility. We just talked about the mist. Let's elaborate a little bit more on that. I think this is a strong possibility.
Okay.
There's a time warp in the Bermuda Triangle. Somehow it's there. People fly into it. People boat into it. And it gobbles them up. Sometimes it brings them back. Sometimes it doesn't. What do you think?
You're right on it. I mean, that's all the evidence. It's right there. George, have you heard of a guy called Hutchison? John Hutchison?
John Hutchison, sure, the Hutchison Effect.
Okay, never mind. I had never heard of that, and I just got onto that, and I was like, you know, he's invented a machine. They say that he said if it was tuned to the right way, he could point at a building and make it disappear, right?
Yep.
You've seen that. Okay, I'm thinking this is the same type thing that could be going off. If he can do it, why couldn't the people in Atlantis have done it, like you said, and that thing's still sitting down there causing these things to disappear?
The other one that is very possible, as you mentioned, the UFO theory.
Right.
How many UFO reports are we getting in this area?
Well, there are at least, and the Coast Guard confirmed this, there's at least one airplane every 2 weeks disappears, and two ships every week disappear.
That we know of.
That we know of. And the Coast Guard reluctantly confirmed that. George, there's stuff going on there. I mean, it's gotten to be so routine that people don't even report it anymore. It just happens every week. So, since 25 years, there's been more than 1,000 ship and airplane disappearances. 1,000.
Now, you were going to mention some new evidence about the Bimini Road. You know, we've always seen pictures of that. What do you think's going on there?
Well, you know, J. Manson Valentine is an oceanographer, professor at the University of Miami, and he was ridiculed when he first discovered this back in '68. Everybody said, "Oh, they've tested it and they've They've done these things. They've done these core samples and all this stuff. Well, a lot of the scientists that were down there with Valentine were all excited, and they said, yes, this thing is man-made. Well, then all the I don't know who these people are, George, but they come in there, and they got to everybody but Manson and made him recount their stories and say, no, these stones are, they've been there forever, and, you know, sure, they're you know, the ocean has changed their shape and everything. But, George, he's come back recently, and he's found 30 other places where these things are perfect, and there's even, like, it looks like where people had malls that they shopped in.
Almost clearly, then, that these are man-made, perhaps a city that somehow got engulfed by the ocean.
Exactly.
Or these are so far off, it's very possible it was either a sunken island or something else.
Yeah. There was a civilization there. I mean, and now you've got Casey talking about, you know, Casey said that in the beginning of time, the pyramids were down there. That was, if you remember this, and a lot of people may not be aware of it, I wasn't, but 10,000 years ago, that whole land base or whole ocean from Florida to Bermuda was dry land.
Well, that's true. You could have almost walked across it,
you
right?
You could have walked across it. So why not a city down there? It gets engulfed in the ocean. Now, this doctor comes along, finds a pyramid with a crystal ball in there. I mean, George, we're just like you said, there's so many things we're not paying attention to. It's out there. It's happening. I believe there's a base between Florida and Bermuda of UFOs, and they're just heading right up to Canada. They're doing their research. They're just ignoring us. Oh, did I get to tell you, George, real quickly, I went to school in Pensacola there at West Florida in Gulf Breeze. You remember when they were seeing all the UFOs there? It was a couple, about 10 years ago. They had a bunch
right.
of sightings. Okay. A man down there, I think he was a doctor or scientist, was on one of the bridges there and actually got a photo of a USO. George, this thing's coming up out of the water. He was only 100 yards from it. You can see the water falling off the UFO.
What about pictures? Why can't we get some great pictures there, Joseph?
This guy's got the picture. I mean, it's in one of the, I couldn't find my book tonight, naturally.
Well we got to get it because it doesn't mean anything unless we see it.
It's there, George. He took, and everybody came along to debunk it, you know, because they kept saying in Gulf Breeze, oh, that's a bunch of bunk. I know people down there that have seen them all the time, fishermen. George, we've gone through there many times fishing.
Oh, the huge Gulf Breeze reports. I mean, they're just massive down in that area. Are you saying it's ongoing?
It's ongoing all the time. People, fishermen, they just ignore them anymore. They don't even report them.
Well, Charles Berlitz would turn over on this one, wouldn't he?
Oh, for sure. I'm going to dig up that picture if I can find it and send it to you, because you can see the seawater falling off of this. I mean, this USO, George, has gone up about, it's not only, it's probably 50 feet out of the water. And the guy goes click, click, and got it perfect.
All right, give me your best theory in a minute we have left, what you think the Bermuda Triangle is.
I think it's a base. I think it's a UFO base. I think that there's, like you said, we said the electronic fogs. I think there's time warps. There's time bends. I think these UFOs are returning from a lost time. When Atlantis is destroyed, they leave the Earth because they say, hey, we can't get along with anybody down there. Now they're coming back to see how the Earth is progressing or degressing.
You might be right, Joe. When we come back, we'll talk about Coral Castle. We're going to Florida to look at the work of Edward Leeds Skolnick.